In the Netherlands, probably they're going to tell you just take a painkiller, particularly paracetamol, and just take some rest. Give your body a chance to defend himself.
Dutch GPs often tell you, well, you know, we'll see. Come back in 2 days. If you still have complaints, then we'll see what's going on.
Hi there, and welcome to the Dutch Guide to Healthy Living. I'm Jillian. I was born in California, raised near Seattle, but I've been a European resident for the last 8 years. I've always been fascinated, as an American, why other countries always seem to do it better. They have better healthcare systems, better health outcomes, vacation time, and seemingly happier lives. When I moved to the Netherlands 2 years ago, I was struck by these tall, thin, bike-riding semi-northerners. The Dutch fly under the radar on most worldwide indexes. While Scandinavian or Mediterranean countries dominate the top spots, the Dutch are always there, sneakily in the top 10, modestly outperforming much of the world. So this podcast is a look into the Dutch way of life through the lens of immigrant stories, culture, science, and history. Today on the show, we're going to look at a different angle in the Dutch healthy way of life, the inner workings of the Dutch healthcare system. Who's in charge? How does it work? How can the Dutch pay only 100 euros per month in healthcare insurance? And why is it ranked as one of the best in the world? We'll hear from Professor Roland Bal. He studies how to measure performance in healthcare systems. And I talked to a friend of mine, Fazi Shamsi, a pharmacist from Syria, about his experiences in both the Dutch and the Syrian healthcare systems. Of course, our Dutchometer Marijn will share his thoughts at the end of the show. And I'll give a couple of tips to help us all be healthier wherever we live. The Dutch healthcare system may be considered one of the pillars of Dutch society. To understand why, we have to understand that throughout the history of the Netherlands, some kind of care was provided for those who could not care for themselves. In the Middle Ages, religious institutions provided for the poor, and by the 1500s, there were specialized care facilities for the elderly. As knowledge and medicine developed, especially understanding of diseases and how to treat them, this eventually started to look more like the hospitals we know today. It became a system with knowledgeable people, doctors, nurses, administrators, running the show. In 1956, the government passed the Gezondheidswet, or the Health Act. It was the first contract between the civil society and the government that looked at healthcare as a collective responsibility. The system today is still based on this principle. Healthcare is a collective responsibility in the Netherlands in which everyone, and I mean everyone, pays into the system and ensures that if anyone gets sick, they are covered with quality care. Professor Roland Bal explains how it works.
You know, like all healthcare systems, the Dutch is complex, but it is a system, unlike you can say of the American system, so-called system. So it is organized in a sense. If you would come to live here in the Netherlands from abroad, you would first need to have health insurance. So actually, all Dutch citizens are obligatory insured.
This includes all people living or working in the Netherlands. When I received my residence visa, it came with a letter explaining that I needed to procure health insurance.
The system works as such that health insurers who are private companies, they compete with each other. There's actually four major ones and then a couple of smaller ones. They procure healthcare from, you know, all kinds of different services. So they have contracts with GPs, with hospitals, with mental health care institutions, with youth care institutions, et cetera, et cetera.
And I want to jump in here to say that they're not for profit. So any excess revenue is either invested into the system or given back to policyholders.
So they invest their profits again in healthcare services. What's been happening over the last couple of years is that they've been investing a lot of their, but they have been investing lots of those reserves into keeping premiums low. But that's increasingly becoming more difficult. So so this year, for example, there's been a considerable, at least for Dutch understanding, considerable raise in the premiums. And so we have a sort of basic healthcare package for which you pay usually around 100 euros a month. So that's 1200 a year. And I think it's now become like 108 or something.
Yes. So 8 euros per month may not seem like a lot, but 8% is actually quite a big increase. in any case, you're required to have a basic health insurance package for which you pay about 100 euros per month. And then...
And through them, well, you access, you know, if you need healthcare, you will go to your GP. Your GP is a sort of obligatory point of passage if you want to enter the healthcare system. So you first go to your GP and you will then be referred or not, you know. Usually Dutch GP, and especially for people abroad, it's often frustrating because Dutch GPs often tell you, well, you know, we'll see. Come back in 2 days. If you still have complaints, then we'll see what's going on. And because most illnesses actually disappear by themselves, right? And the most people who go to GPs either have a cold or, you know, something, a weird feeling in their stomach or whatever, and usually it just vanishes in a couple of days. So that's sort of GP policy. And of course, they have to be aware that, you know, a funny feeling in your stomach could also mean something else, right? And they're trained in, you know, looking for troubles. And if they see trouble, then they will refer you to a specialized service, usually a hospital, where you get further diagnostics and treatments.
Yeah, so this is a really common complaint from people from abroad. You'll hear Fuzzy talk more about this later in the show, but it's also paramount in the Dutch system for keeping costs down. It's called a gatekeeper system, and it means that rather than going directly to an expensive specialist, you first go to your GP, who determines if you need to see a specialist. There are some downsides to this system, of course, but we'll come back to that later. So far, we have the patients, the insurers, and the GPs. So what's the role of the government in this whole system?
It has several roles. For example, well, in the first place, it sort of sets the rules and regulations under which this system can work. So it produces actually creating a sort of playing field for healthcare. Secondly, it does a lot of supervision. So we have a healthcare inspectorate, but we also have a healthcare authority. And the inspectorate watches over the quality and safety of healthcare, whereas the healthcare authority watches over the sort of the financial stuff, if there's no fraud or, you know, whatever. And then there's a third organization that, which is called the Healthcare Institute of the Netherlands, which sets the limits of the basic healthcare package. It defines what is insured or not. And for those things that are not insured, you then get, you know, you can have private insurance. For example, GP care is in there, but some plastic surgeries are not, for example.
So the government essentially supervises the whole process. They make sure that everything necessary is covered under the basic healthcare package. And they try to ensure health and safety as well as quality. They are also constantly trying to make sure that healthcare doesn't become too expensive, which is a big consideration for the Netherlands going forward. But the Dutch healthcare system consistently ranks as one of the best systems in the world, and I wanted to know why.
Well, if you look at the sort of the international rankings, then the Dutch healthcare system is usually somewhere in the, you know, the top five or something. So apparently it is doing well. Where it's particularly doing well is in terms of access. So all people actually do have healthcare, and all people do have healthcare from a fairly good sort of healthcare. So there's very little differences between hospitals in that sense. And of course, there are quality differences, but the minimum level is actually pretty good. If you compare, for example, to the US healthcare system, the differences are enormous, right? So public hospitals can have very, very low quality, whereas some of the private hospitals are world leading. And we in the Netherlands, and I think generally in Europe, don't have those kinds of differences between healthcare services. So we don't have the bottom, but we also don't have the top. And of course, we have, you know, some services that are really outstanding also internationally, but usually we are more sort of in the middle range somewhere, but overall in the middle range for the total population.
So the Dutch provide good access of care to everybody. Why does this rank them so highly? Well, when we start to look at specific indicators that determine performance of a healthcare system, like life expectancy, maternal mortality, distance to a hospital, etc., a very good quality of care for everybody leads to higher averages. Although, Roland says that some of these indicators can lead to tunnel vision.
So we have performance measures, say, for length of stay, for accessibility, for waiting times, for if you get a pressure ulcer, if you're in the hospital or not, if you die too soon after an operation, or, you know, all those kinds of things. The difficult one is that those measures actually don't tell very much. And so because, and that's That's difficult to understand because, well, there's actually two reasons for that. So one is that they are, you know, very specific measures. And if you know, even if you know like 30 things about a hospital, you don't know the hospital. You know, a hospital consists of, you know, many thousands things. And you just assume that those sort of 30 measures tell you something about the quality of that hospital, which is probably not true. So that's one thing. So there is a sort of tunnel vision created by those indicators. And you can also imagine that if hospitals are measured on specific indicators, they try to perform well on those indicators, you know, and they might neglect others where they're not measured. It's like students. They want to, you know, have good grades for their exams. So they study for the exam rather than study for a sort of longer learning purpose, which, of course, teachers want them to do. So and hospitals are, you know, in that sense, like every other person or organization.
Luckily, we're developing more types of methods to measure. Like, here's Roland again.
For example, more qualitative methods. So you can ask patients not only to report what they, you know, in a sort of quantitative sense, how did you like this hospital, but also have, say, focus group discussions with patients, what they liked about the hospital and how they felt and how they were treated and what they liked about that and those kinds of things. So a lot of healthcare organizations actually use more qualitative methods also to gain more insight into how their patients like treatment in the hospitals. So, and there it becomes more complex because those are not in a sense objective, not as objective as the numbers seem to be. And so it's more difficult to compare hospitals alongside those more qualitative dimensions. But they do work in the sense that that hospitals learn a lot from them and so can improve on their services.
This is similar to what I try to do on this podcast. Give you the quantitative facts, but also some anecdotal stories or more qualitative opinions. I want to jump here to the story of a friend of mine, Fawzi.
Hello, everybody. I'm Fawzi Shamsi. I'm a pharmacist from Syria, and I'm living here in Netherlands since 2015.
Fawzi and I met through our master's program here in the Netherlands. I was studying the international public health track, while Fawzi was on the management and entrepreneurship in health sciences track. Together with a group of international students, we frequently discussed health, healthcare systems, philosophy, and ethics around health in different countries. I always found Fawzi's perspective enlightening and wanted to share it with you. I have to admit, Fawzi was hesitant to do the podcast because he thought his English wasn't good enough and said that he talks a lot with his hands. I think his English is definitely good enough, but you miss everything he says with his hands. So picture with me that we're talking via online video calling and Fawzi is enthusiastically gesturing during our conversation. So Fawzi, why did you decide to become a pharmacist?
Actually, there are many reasons, but simply because I like biology and medicine, but also I like business and being entrepreneur and also communicate with others. So I thought being a pharmacist can be a balance between these two fields. And I believe also pharmacists provide a good societal service. For that, I believe pharmacists a good job for me. Actually, I started in 2004 and I graduated in 2009. I studied in Jordan. I graduated from University of Petra.
And were you able to work as a pharmacist in Syria?
Actually, I worked a pharmacist in Syria, and also I work in a pharmaceutical company since 2010 until 2014, when I left Syria. I work as a key account manager in a company, pharmaceutical company, and also I work as a pharmacist in my own pharmacy.
So what are the biggest differences in being a pharmacist in Syria or in the Netherlands?
I think the big difference is that pharmacists in Syria allow more to give medicine, and let's say OTC medicine, at least, it's bigger than Netherlands. So the pharmacist in Syria is allowed more to give the medicine. But in the Netherlands, the rules are more strict, and the pharmacists are not allowed to do a lot, just to prescribe the prescription.
Right. Yeah. So the main difference is the level of responsibility given to the pharmacist. It's true that here in the Netherlands, you really only go to a pharmacy to pick up a prescription from a doctor. But I know, like, for example, in France, the pharmacists also have more of an active role in patient care. So you can really ask them questions, and they also have quite some freedom in terms of the medications that they give you. The OTC list, like you said, so OTC is over the counter. But what do you think works well in the Dutch healthcare system?
I think it's organized well, and also they have a high quality service for patients. What I like most is the general trend for prevention instead of treatment. I've heard many complain about that from patients, which I understand because maybe they have a serious problem. But in general, I believe focusing on the prevention and increase immunity can help more, especially in this period, which we can notice that with this pandemic, nothing works more than increasing your immunity. So I think this general trend is really useful.
And so how does this compare with the healthcare system in Syria?
Actually, the healthcare system in Syria is the same as any healthcare system in a developing country, where the health ministry set up or supervision the healthcare system by setting the plan, policy, and also goal, and even monitoring the implementation. In general, we have a public sector and we have a private sector. It's working fine, but I think it's used the old or traditional method of treatment. So I think I prefer now more the Dutch healthcare system.
When you say more traditional, do you mean more medication, less prevention, more aggressive?
I mean by that, if you have a patient, you have to diagnose, then give the treatment by prescription. But here in the Netherlands, if you are sick, you will go to the house art or GP, you will go without prescription, often.
But you like the Dutch system with less medication better.
I know it's a little bit strange for a pharmacist to say that, but I think it's focusing on increasing immunity. It's better just to give your body a chance to defend himself. I think it's better than just give him medicine. And I think it's a little bit related to the culture, because Syrian patients like to get medicine. And as much as he has a medicine, that means the doctor is knowledgeable or has a knowledge. In the Netherlands, probably they're going to tell you, okay, go just take a painkiller, particularly paracetamol, and just take some rest. Give your body a chance to defend himself.
So what about, are there negative sides in the Dutch healthcare system?
We can say also there are some negative points in the healthcare system, Dutch healthcare system. There are many regulations and terms the doctors have to follow. I think this is not really effective. If I compare that with Syria, I see the Syrian doctors are more initiative. This is positive mark for Syrian healthcare system, because doctors need to think out of the box just to find the best solution, especially if they can save the money for the healthcare system and also offer the benefit for the patient.
Yeah, so doctors in the Netherlands are really limited by the regulations and the bureaucracy. But one thing we haven't talked about yet is that the GPs are actually only allowed to spend about 10 minutes with the patient, which is really fast.
I think it's too fast, because usually even you do not sit for 10 minutes, probably less, because of the huge pressure on doctors. Imagine if doctors be seeing 40 patients a day. I think it's massive. It's something really crazy. What I'm saying, I believe that the healthcare system is good, and they are now big trend just to go to prevention instead of treatment. But also there are some problems has to be solved, especially bureaucracies or the huge pressure on the doctors. This policy has to be restructured again.
Fawzi's assessment of the difficulty associated with the strict guidelines and the bureaucracy in the Netherlands aligns perfectly with Roland's research. Here's Roland.
We're actually in a transition in that regard. So we come from a system, well, if you go way back, and way back I mean before say, the 1970s or 80s, it was usually healthcare professionals themselves that, you know, that were looking at quality. So the sort of self-regulatory professions. So nurses would take care of the quality of nursing care, doctors of nursing, of the quality of medical care, etc. From the 70s and 80s, that changed. So it became more an object of study, more research into quality. It became an object of regulation. So the healthcare inspectorate actually was strengthened to regulate healthcare more. We got guidelines, all those kinds of things. And that was a very sort of top-down movement. Somewhere from the center, we define what quality is, and you, healthcare workers, have to comply with those standards. That worked well for a while, I think, and it really helped in creating more awareness of quality and safety issues. It also worked in the sense that it became more of a topic of discussion within healthcare organizations. It worked well for quite a while, and then it didn't work so well anymore. And there's lots of complaints, for example, about the amount of guidelines. So there's all kinds of discussions about the administrative pressure that comes from complying with those standards. And there's also a lot of discussion about, you know, those standards coming from the center, whereas healthcare professionals from the work floor actually know, of course, do know a lot about what they're doing with their patients. And so this interaction between bottom up and top down is actually more on the agenda now. So we're now in a transition in which actually I think guidelines and indicators are still used, but in slightly different ways. So much more as sort of guidance to actually make sure that there is sort of reflection in practice on quality issues, but also discussion between different specialties, for example, between different professionals, that the discussion about quality around is organized more around the patient rather than at the organizational level. And then, of course, that means also that regulation slowly starts to change. So instead of looking at, you know, the compliance with standards, it is now more looking at the way that quality is governed within the organization. And actually, our research has been instrumental in helping, well, for example, the healthcare inspectorate to make that transition. And we're not there yet, but we're somewhere. In the middle, I think. One of the big challenges now, for example, that we're working on is, as I said earlier, integration of services is a big thing. But regulation tends to be focused on single organizations. So it focuses on a hospital or a GP practice, or rather, but patients, of course, move between those practices. And quality is not so much an effect, or it's partly an effect of what happens in those specific units, but it is much more even of an effect of what happens between them. So it emerges in the interactions between those organizations. And to regulate that aspect of the integration of care is still very much of a problem. And I think there is a sort of next step.
Roland says that the integration of care is one of the biggest areas of improvement for the Dutch healthcare system. He also mentions that some aspects of obstetric care have been internationally criticized and could be improved in the Netherlands. So people like Roland are working tirelessly to improve an already good system, and it's something that the Dutch are quite proud of. Let's check in with Marijn, my partner, and our Dutchometer about his thoughts on the Dutch healthcare system.
So Marijn, I don't want to give away too much of how we do this whole Dutchometer thing, you know, behind the scenes. But we've been kind of sitting here trying to think about a story that you could tell about the Dutch healthcare system, or how to make the Dutch healthcare system episode more interesting.
Even more interesting, and completely spontaneously come up with a good healthcare system story.
Yeah. But we're kind of struggling with that. We've been kind of struggling with that. And yeah, I guess you maybe have some thoughts about why we're struggling with that.
Well, so the funny thing is that it's almost like you ask me to talk about the taste of water or something, the flavor of water. Like, it is just there. Like, a good healthcare system in the Netherlands, it's just there with all its flaws and with all its not being perfect yet, and Dutch people wanting to perfect it even. But, and I don't know if this is a cultural thing where maybe I don't understand what it is like to actually live in a country in which you really have to take care of your healthcare. Like here, you go out for a healthcare insurance policy. It doesn't really matter which one you take because you pay around like 100, 125 euros or something, and you get some add-ons, and there might be a difference in how they pay for your bills or whatever, but it's really not that much of a difference. And then when you get sick, you go to a GP, you go to a doctor, and then you, like, it's also, it doesn't seem special. Like, it doesn't seem like we just invent, like, we never sent a man to the moon or something. We just take care of our people in a hospital or at a GP. And so it's really difficult to come up with something that's like, oh yeah, so this is my experience. That's just the experience. There's one thing that we talked about that really came up, and that's every once in a while feels like you'll get a stomach ache or you'll get a headache and you feel like, oh, maybe I'm sick or something. And like, you can worry about that, sure. That you can worry about, but the healthcare part of it, you don't really worry about, because even if you do get sick, then healthcare is there. Everywhere you go to, you will be taken care of. And that's, I guess, the more I talk to you or the more I hear about healthcare systems abroad, the more I appreciate the fact that it is so automatic here. That being said, of course, there will be people who actually have chronic illnesses who struggle with the healthcare system, and you have to fill out a lot of papers and stuff like that. I'm sure that that's really difficult, and I luckily haven't really had that experience yet. So that's good. That's good for me, and I'm sure that some people would have different stories. But no, I'm for that part, I'm really happy to be living in the Netherlands.
Okay, so what's your earliest medical need memory?
Well, I don't know what my earliest memory is. I would have to think. But there's one thing. It's quite a Dutch story, I guess. So I'm like 7 or 8 years old. And I used to bike to school. Because in the Netherlands, you always bike to school. And it's a gloomy morning and I wake up and my hip hurts. And I go downstairs and I eat my breakfast and I say to my mom, Mom, my leg hurts. My mom's going to kill me for this. And she says, well, I see what you're doing here. It's raining outside. You don't want to bike. But, you know, you'll be better and stronger when you bike to school. But it hurts. Well, anyway, so I get on the bike. And I get back for lunch. And she sends me out again in the afternoon, even though my leg hurts. And
just a little like point here in between that you came home for lunch.
Yeah, so we would bike home for lunch,
yeah,
and then back to school again. And it's like a mile and a half or something, so like 6 miles per day, and you're like 7 or 8 or whatever. And
10 kilometers.
And after a couple days of leg hurting, my mom was like, okay, I guess we're going to ask a doctor. And we go to the doctor and they're like, yeah, he's got an infection to his bone in his hip. And I walked on crutches for a couple weeks. Oh, my mother. Oh, well.
But also your mom's a nurse and your dad is a doctor.
Yeah, those are the worst, because your own kids are never sick.
Neither of them could figure out that there was something.
No,
wrong.
They see bad things all day, and then just a little whining kid that has a little bit of pain, they're like, oh, come on, get over it.
So actually, the healthcare system worked just fine. It was just your mom as the gatekeeper that didn't work particularly
well.
Yeah,
I guess she was the gatekeeper's gatekeeper. Yeah.
All right, so the Dutch have one of the best healthcare systems in the world, but it has been a long time and a lot of work in the making. It uses an interesting combination of private health insurance companies that are not for profit, very important, combined with quite a bit of government regulation. Individuals are required to procure health insurance or faced a hefty fine, but it costs only about 100 euros per month. and this is supplemented for people who can't afford it. In order to reduce costs, patients must first visit their GP, who more often than not tells them they're fine and they should just take a paracetamol and rest. But they're always on alert for more serious illnesses and will refer patients to specialists when necessary. But as the health problems become more complex, for example, multiple illnesses in one person, the system's not really built to handle the integration of care, nor the regulation of that integration. That's a mouthful. Roland and his team are busy trying to work out how to better regulate these interactions and ensure quality of care for patients. Interestingly, Fozzie points out that having less guidelines and bureaucracy for doctors in Syria may allow them to do this more naturally, and this collaboration allows them to be more innovative in their treatment of patients. As we're coming to the end of this episode, you might be thinking, okay, this is interesting, but I don't live in the Netherlands, so how is this supposed to help me? Well, as I mentioned in the last episode, I think it's important when we talk about health to recognize that there are some things outside of your control. The healthcare system in the country in which you live might be one of those things, but making an effort to understand the system and the way it operates may be helpful to you if you ever become a patient. And in some countries, it might help save you some money. If you have insurance, for example, get to know it and try to learn what's covered. You might be surprised. And I think we can all take a leaf out of the Dutch GP's and Fozzie's book. Sometimes the body just needs to heal itself, not to be overloaded with medicines. Here in the Netherlands, they often only recommend paracetamol as a painkiller or to reduce fever. Of course, please always check with your doctor or your pharmacist. Tune in 2 weeks from now for the next full episode. We're going to look at the work-life balance in the Netherlands. People work on average 31 hours per week here, and only 8% of the population works more than 40 hours a week. But there's been quite some criticism recently about how this plays out between men and women, especially people with children. We're going to take a closer look. And a special announcement that next week I will have a mini episode in celebration of the Dutch holiday Sinterklaas. If you live in the Netherlands and want to contribute, send me one of your favorite Sinterklaas stories or memories, and you might be on the show. Also notice that I find it very difficult to pronounce Sinterklaas. And another announcement, I wanted to thank everyone out there who has listened to the first episodes. The response has been tremendous. If you want to support the show, just tell a friend about us, or give us a rating in Apple Podcasts. It really helps people to find the show. If you want more updates, or you want to ask a question or leave a comment, you can follow the show on Instagram, The Dutch Guide, or on Twitter, Dutch Guide Pod. Or send me an email, jillian@thedutch.guide. A big thanks to Roland and Fozzie for being on the show today. You can find more about Roland's work in the show notes. And of course, thanks to Marijn for his Dutch perspective, and to my brother, Teddy O'Mara, for composing the amazing theme song. See you next time!